Welcome to We Are Listening, an audio broadcast. I'm your host, Jelaine Skyers. This is part 3 in a part 4 series on the UN Convention on the Right of the Child. This November makes 20 years since the convention was agreed upon by 192 countries to protect children all over the world. In part 3 of our series, we unpack what the right to identity really means, beyond just name and nationality. Next, we interview Amanda Pierce of the Lost Lyrics Project in Ontario.
My name is Amanda Paris, and I am the coordinator of the Lost Lyrics program, as well as the Outreach and Community Partnerships coordinator for the Remix Project. Lost Lyrics, it was created by myself and my best friend with the intention of creating a space between the streets and the classroom. Based on our experiences of being in school, there were a lot of stories and narratives that we felt like we should have learned about that we didn't learn about within the mainstream school system, or else we learned about them when we were in university, where it was a space where you had to pay and not a lot of people necessarily have access to. And we wanted to create a space to have that kind of access to information and stories in really creative and innovative ways from a very young age. We've been working with kids between the ages of 11 to 17 for the last 3 to 4 years working on that. Because of the communities that we work within, which are the Jane and Finch community and the Malvern community, those are very high diasporic communities, whether it be strong South Asian diasporas, Caribbean diasporas, West African diasporas. And so culture obviously plays a role whenever you're in those types of spaces. At least I feel like it should. And just because of who we are and the kind of ways that we look at education, we feel as though there should definitely be a sort of personal investment that comes as a part of education. And so personal is cultural as well too. So you have to know about yourself in order to know where you're going.
Do you think the education system now is lacking that piece?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely from what I can see, it definitely has when I was in school, and from the visits that I've been able to do in school systems, it continues to lack in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, the way that culture is engaged is in a very tokenistic way. So it's like, this month we'll celebrate culture, or this week we'll have multiculturalism, not engaging the power dynamics that come with being able to do that, and not looking at culture as a very holistic way. So you can use culture as a tool to explore almost anything if you really want to. What gets named as culture is oftentimes just kind of relegated to the arts, and the arts is seen as something else. And not realizing that what we're currently being taught is cultural, but it's a Eurocentric culture. And so that invisibility that this is a culture, and it really just being defined as the norm, can be very detrimental to someone's development, because they see that as the normative. That means they create sort of like an internal hierarchy within themselves and saying, oh, well, this is just what's normal, and what's normal is whiteness, and I am not of that, and I've been taken away, and I don't have any other spaces of support to tell me that what I am and who I am and where I come from is also just as valid and important and should really be recognized and explored by me, so I can make my own decisions about how I want to live my life.
Yeah. What do you see the role of the government and individuals in the community in terms of teaching young people about their culture?
I personally am coming from a perspective where I think education should not just be limited or delegated to sort of like the things that have been deemed educational institutions. I think education is a holistic experience, and it doesn't have a start and end time. I think, like, similar to First Nations communities, education is just an overall experience. You're educated from the time you are born, you know? I think so that, with that being said, I feel like every aspect of society plays a role in the education of young people. So whether it be government and the policies that are made, which are very, very important, to the grassroots organizing and programs that exist in communities that have another type of engagement with young people, to just like families and the way that they have conversations and the way that they share what they might not necessarily think is important parts of their history, but even just knowing the experiences of our grandparents or our parents coming to these countries are parts of our history that are already being lost in the midst of this age of documentation, because people are not realizing how important those narratives are. There's a huge movement right now amongst like youth-led organizing, so it's where young people are taking the initiative themselves to really develop and understand, know who they are and what they want to do. So in terms of what's motivated me, I think that there's a wide range of spectrums that have motivated me. I think in a way it wasn't even programs, it was actually going to university and having the opportunity to be taught for the first time ever in my whole educational experience by a black person and a black woman at that, and to take and her name is Andrea Davis, and she influenced me a huge amount just to even see her in that position and to do what she was doing and to be able to personalize education in a certain way. The classes that she taught really changed my life: Cultures of Resistance in the Americas, Black Culture and Literature in Canada, and Black Women's Writing. And it really allowed me to say that I, like, my narrative and my experiences are important in a certain way, and that they should be shared, and I should create a space to share them with other people. Artists like Debbie Young, Audrey Zina Mandiela, Aita Sadhu, all of these incredible women who have really translated their activism and their politics into very tangible artistic or business or both. Just be aware of how much the outside world is really trying to inform those thoughts for you. That's all you can do, is be aware of it. It doesn't mean that there's any right way or there's any wrong way to live your life, to look. Awareness is the biggest key, so educating yourself in the best ways possible. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean reading books. It could just mean taking time out to just reflect and meditate and think on larger levels. Think on not just on levels of yourself as an individual, but of, you know, the generations that came before you, whether it be your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, thinking about how, where your family has traveled and how many journeys they have gone through. Those are all part of what makes you who you are.
Welcome back. For more information about the Lost Lyrics Project, please visit lostlyrics06@gmail.com. Newcomer youth in Canada struggle to find a sense of identity, partly because they aren't respected in our education system, media, and politics. A recent York University study reports newcomer youth are 3 times more likely to live in poverty. 44% live below low-income cutoffs. These youths face many risk factors while being out of work and out of school. Desiree knows about these risks firsthand. He was interviewed about the importance of positive role models, especially in newcomers and other at-risk communities.
Life can be crazy sometimes. Tell me what we are going to do now.
Well, my name is Desiree, originally from St. Lucia. Trinidadian and St. Lucian background. Born in St. Lucia, moved to Toronto when I was 16 years old. Growing up, the motivation was stemmed basically from my dad. Good role model growing up. He was a dean of the teachers training college, so I always aspired to be more than the average person, just like he was. Having the perspective of living in a third world country and eventually migrating to a first world country, I could certainly see that there are some cultural differences as far as how you are socialized. I think they're missing that positive reinforcement of seeing people that they could identify with in positions of authority, positions where they aspire to be. It's one thing to tell a kid that he could be whatever he wants to be, but if he can't see anyone in those positions that he can identify with, it's certainly a challenge actually believing it.
When they say your love is gone, what we are gonna do now?
Well, I think part of it is again, I'm growing up with parents that were middle class, and they were able to give me all the outlets, play sports, send me on day camps during the summer. And again, both my parents were very successful, so the immediate people I had in my life were very, very strong individuals that were very successful. So I think, you know, my main influence came from home. With immigrants, there's less, economically, there's less money to go around, and you have kids that don't have an outlet. They don't get to participate in sports, probably because the parents can't afford it, and they're left with a lot of idle time. And most of these kids don't know any better to get what they need, but to turn to crime and what they see in their community. So certainly that's a big influence on you know, you have kids growing up watching people doing, you know, in and out of jail. They're most likely going to identify with that and think that's their only outlet. the percentage of, you know, which is a very, obviously a very small percentage out of those poor neighborhoods that actually make it out. I believe they move out of those neighborhoods and they move to neighborhoods where, you know, where they're basically a minority. Maybe, you know, you get people moving from the core, where you have public housing and lots of apartment buildings, over to the more residential areas. And unfortunately, they move because they have a chance to move out of the bad areas and for safety reasons and to socialize their kids in a different environment, as to not allow their kids to be influenced by their peers in a negative way. So, you know, although that's sort of a selfish way of dealing with things, you know, but that's what people feel they need to do to survive. With that being done, obviously, you have the good people that are successful moving out of those poor neighborhoods. And unfortunately, the people that are left back to become role models are the ones that are obviously not doing the right things. The best influences that we have are the people immediately around us. But I think taking one go around and probably being influenced by the people around and realizing that it didn't lead to a good path, then I think we need to look beyond what's immediately around us. And I think with the social programs available and the positive black people and people of color that are doing positive things, I think we could all look to those role models beyond what's in our immediate environment to move forward. I think at this point, with some of the social programs that allow, you know, ex-offenders to get back into the working community, the training available, there's certainly an opportunity for them to move forward and live productive lives as productive citizens. It's clear that percentage-wise, I don't think, you know, people of color are represented in some of those positions. With that being said, I think, you know, growing up and being at my age, I think I've seen a certain change and a shift towards more people of color being in those positions. So it's not something that will change overnight. I think as we invest more into our younger people, educate them, I think they're naturally going to have opportunities to get into those positions. So although it's not an equal playing field right now and they're not equally represented, I certainly see a move towards getting them educated and we're moving in the right direction. Again, we keep coming back to Barack Obama, but I think the barriers he's broken in the United States, which is traditionally been looked at as the most racially diverse country in the world, proves to us that there are no barriers that we can't overcome if we work hard enough, regardless of our race.
This has been We Are Listening, an audio broadcast. We thank the Ontario Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth, as well as the Network Group Community and the Lost Lyrics Project for these interviews. For more information, please visit provincialadvocate.on.ca. Stay tuned for part 4 in a 4-part series where we talk about how youth can reclaim their rights and participate in the system that affects their daily lives. We also find out what Canada needs to truly implement the International Convention on the Rights of the Child. When they say your love is gone, what we are gonna do now? Baby.